Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Do you like the great outdoors? Are you or are you looking to be a master bow hunter, king of the hill in archery? You're in the right place. Welcome to Bow Hunter Planet. It's the Bow Hunter Planet podcast, recorded live in the BHP studios, Detroit, Michigan, with your host, Team BHP.
The BHP podcast is proudly presented by Vanguard Outdoors. Learn more at vanguardworld.us.
Hey guys, Dave from the Bowhunter Planet Podcast. We're looking for cool hunting stories from you. We want to hear your stories. If you have a cool story and you want to submit it for a chance to be featured on the podcast, send us an email at team@bowhunterplanet.com with your story. There's a good chance you could be invited onto the podcast. Hey, enjoying the hunt.
Hello and welcome to the Bowhunter Planet Podcast. Myself, Dave Thomas, along with John Cedar.
What's up?
Laura. Very low, that one. I don't know why.
How come you didn't try to say your last name?
I didn't want to try it. I wasn't even going to attempt it. That's why I hesitated.
You don't know her last name is.
I want to say Belcher, and I know that's not right.
It's not Belcher.
I can't even say Belcher.
Belcher, what?
I would pronounce it Rubicon.
I like that better.
Rubaduba.
Chad Rubicon.
This is Rabadaba.
Tim the Mazarana, Chris the McGee, and Kevin the Conlin, who likes to, you know. Anyway, cut! And today we're talking to Brandon Adams, a Major League bow hunter. This year it looks like you've already been on the board a lot, so I guess tell us about some stories. Like, what's been going on?
Man, I've been absolutely just like murdering it this year.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a run. I started out in September in Colorado, and we were in like some high country, like farm ground, and I got a real nice velvet muley up there. On the third day of the hunt, I came home for a few days, and then went to Kentucky on September the 9th. On my third day of the hunt and killed a really nice buck there. And then I went to Kansas, and on the third day of that hunt, killed a really nice buck there. Nice. So I absolutely just, like, killed it starting off the year.
That is exciting, man. It looks like a lot of great deer here going down on the Instagram you got.
Unbelievable. Yeah, man, it's been awesome. And then I came home, and I actually canceled some rut hunts because I was like, dude, I don't need to kill 6 or 7 deer. Let's just calm down, everyone. And so I canceled some rut hunts, and I was just going to focus on getting one. Oklahoma, you get 2 bucks. So I was going to focus on getting one behind my house because I got several really nice bucks here. Small acreage, but still some nice deer. And I hunted the entire month of October. I had an opportunity at the buck that I was after, the number one buck I was after, on November the 1st, and shot high, unfortunately, at 40 yards. But I was able to catch back up with him a couple weeks ago, actually, on the 18th. And the buck died about 20 yards from my wellhouse.
Jeez.
So it was a heck of a hunt. It's by far the most meaningful buck I've ever killed. and had both my girls with me. I mean, it was a pretty special hunt. So
yeah, that's really cool, man. But yeah, yeah. I mean, sounds like the deer hunting's just been pretty easy for you this year. I wish I could say the same.
Exactly. It's been tough. That's a pretty similar story that I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're all laughing.
You should, you know what, Brandon? If you want some, seriously though, if you want some really hard hunting, you should go with Kevin to the UP of Michigan. You'd be like, "What are you guys doing? Like, what is this all about? This
There's
is
probably
crazy.
A good reason why none of my stories, none of my little things I just shared had anything to do with the UP of Michigan.
True that.
I'm just kidding.
Oh no.
They're bigger than a 90, huh?
Yeah.
90?
Wait. Were any of your deer being chased by wolves? That's what I want to
know. Not that I was aware of.
Yeah, we got a little bit of a wolf problem in Michigan. It's just, I don't know. It's just a little bit, it's weird because it's not something you would normally see. But, you know, we're not the only state to bring wolves back, but Michigan is one of the states that decided to put them back in the UP, which has really caused a lot of anger in the Upper Peninsula for the hunters and the people who live there, you know. Yeah. Because, you know, it's like all these people saying, oh, it's no big deal, but then it's like, well, you don't live with them. Like, right. It's a big deal. Yeah. Not a big deal to you in the city down in Detroit or wherever you're at in Lansing, but it is a big deal to us when they're eating our cows. Well, and
it adds that extra element of pressure, too.
Yeah.
On them. Well. It just makes it that much tougher. So
I think it's a little exciting.
I think it makes a better bow hunter.
I think it makes you a little better because you're a little more nervous of what's out there, right? And you get a pack of wolves on you. You're not, you know, this ain't no coyote.
Are they running around, like, in packs? I mean, this is the first I've heard of, like, a problem being in Michigan. Are they actually packed up, or are they just, like, lone wolves here and there?
No, they're packed up.
Yeah, they packed.
I was hunting in a blind probably 2 years ago, and I saw a buck, and then the next thing I know, I saw a wolf. I'm like, oh, there's a wolf, you know. Then there was two more behind it and two more behind it, so there's like five of them, and they were definitely packed up and hunting this deer.
Oh, my goodness. I can imagine that a pack of wolves is going to do some damage. I mean, they got to eat a lot of calories to live. Wow.
The problem is that in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, you get a lot of winter snow, and the deer, it's so much snow that the deer actually migrate into, like, the into the swamps and stuff, and then they're kind of vulnerable because they're all corralled up and everything, and the wolves can just come and take what they want when they want. So
it's a buffet, winter buffet.
Yeah,
and it's bad. The bad part is in the spring when, you know, they're able to still run on the crusty snow, and the deer who are dropping fawns can't get away, and it's kind of a bad situation. Of course, the DNR says it's not a problem, though.
Yeah, nature, it's vicious.
So anyway, how's the show going? What's going on Major League Bowhunter?
Major League Bowhunter is also murdering it this year. I mean, just absolutely on fire. We've never in the history of Major League Bowhunter, 8 seasons, had a season like this. It seems like everyone just has a horseshoe, and everywhere we go, we end up with a pick deer. I mean, Chipper's killed 4 already. Including his first elk, he's killed a whitetail in Nebraska, whitetail in Kansas, whitetail in Iowa, all big deer. Duff, I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything, but Duff killed a great one in Nebraska, a mule deer, a spot and stalk hunt, and then this is going to be replayed later, so it's fine. Duff killed an absolute giant. The one that he's been after killed it this morning in Mississippi.
So, wow, very cool.
Like, I mean, a really big deer, and it's on the farm that he grew up on. Like, it's a special, special deer. Not only because of how big it is, but also because, you know, where it was killed. So, and then Brandon Danker and Zach both have had great years. Brandon's killed 2, and Zach's killed 1. So, I mean, we're just, like I said, we're just having a banner year.
We got
more kills than we have needed for episodes.
That's 2 years deep now.
I don't know what I'm going to do as the producer. I don't know. I mean, we're going to have to just, I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's interesting from what I've seen this year. I don't know what happened between this year and last year, but it seems to me that a lot of big bucks hit the ground this year. A lot of big bucks. More than I've ever seen. More than I've ever seen.
100%. I have not seen or not gotten more text messages than this year of saying, I find, you know, I've been after this deer for 3 years and I finally got him, or like, you know, just pictures of big, big deer just hitting the dirt. Yeah. I don't know what the deal is. I do know, I will say this, I have kind of like thought about this also. The Midwest got hit real hard with EHD, you know, 2010, 2011, 2012. It was like 3 or 4 years in a row, you know, where it was real bad drought years, and the numbers just got decimated. A lot of places that we hunt, like southwestern and northwestern Missouri and southwestern Iowa into Illinois, over into Nebraska and Kansas, like the numbers literally got like 40% and then 40% 2 years in a row. So like the hunting was terrible. And I think that we've had more rain, you know, in the last, you know, say 3 or 4 years. I think that the herds are healthier. There's more food for the deer because the numbers got cut so drastically. I don't know. It's just, I think that the deer are just healthier and there's more of them. And I think it had a lot to do with that disease that we had, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exciting to see, you know, the big deer is going down.
I mean, but really, if you think about it, even in our teams, we've seen a lot more deer this year than ever, really. Yeah. I mean, Tim, you shot one in the butt, and that one got away, and then you shot another one in the shoulder. I had my chance twice at a big deer in Michigan, which is weird. I mean, it's never happens.
You got the stories flipped, by the way.
And I see more coyote action this year too. Just kidding.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's true. I mean, opening day though. I mean, I saw more deer opening day than I saw all of last season. I mean, it was absolutely crazy.
How much
running around. So
I think a lot more people are starting to do like quality deer management now too. I think, you know, there's a lot of advertisements we see around. You know, just driving up north. You know, the signs everywhere. This is what a 2.5 year old looks like. 3.5, 4.5, 5.5, and you know, I know, like, where I hunt in club country, so there's a lot of hunt clubs, and a lot of those hunt clubs enforce, like, APRs, like antler point restrictions. So, you know, we're seeing bucks that we've never seen on this property, you know, up until the last 3 or 4 years, just because people are being selective.
That whole concept, though, you know, we just had the guys from QDMA on a couple episodes ago, and I learned a lot from that conversation, a lot more than I thought I would, to be honest, and it was a very good conversation, because their whole motto is that it's on you to decide, like, what to do. You don't have to follow those specific guidelines, but let's face it, right? If you have, like, a good example is, you know, if you have a deer on your property that's a 120, but you're going after a 150, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense to shoot the 120? It really doesn't, because if you've seen the 150, you're after the 150. You've had chances at the 150. You know it's still there. You can see on camera or someone's seen it for you, whatever. That's the choice a person has to make, you know, but it's kind of silly. I mean, if you don't need the meat, I'm saying, then at that point, you know, shoot a doe or whatever. I get it, it's my point. Like, you can easily do it in that realm.
I mean, to fill your freezer, yes. Yeah. But no,
I agree. I mean, I see a lot of it. It's funny you guys talk about a lot more people are joining in the QDMA, you know, mindset. And, whenever I started with that mindset, I started following, like, the rules that the QDMA would, you know, put out there. You know, I was almost shunned from my family, you know, from hunting camp. I would literally get made fun of. And it's funny that we're talking about this now, because I killed that buck on the 18th, and I text my neighbor a picture of the deer. I was like, hey, you know, I got this, you know, look at this deer, and it's a great deer. It's a deer I was after all years, the biggest buck that was living on me. I had a couple of deer that showed up, you know, just rut bucks come through. But, I mean, it was a great deer. And I texted him. He goes, how old do you think he was? And I was like, I think he was 4.5, maybe 5. He goes, oh, I only shoot 7 or 8 year-olds. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's really neat. Like, I'm not used to guys, like, being looked down on. Like, that's really neat. But on 30 acres, I'm going to shoot whatever I want to.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I'm going to shoot 4. I said 4.5 year-old enough is good enough for me. And it is. So.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So are you done for the season?
I have one more tag left in Oklahoma, and Major League Bowhunter has a lease in northwestern Oklahoma in the Panhandle. And so here in a couple of weeks, they got some cold weather rolling in. I'm going to try to venture up there and, you know, try to get one in front of me. So
generally on an average year, like, how many tags do you pull a year generally?
Like, do I punch or do I go on?
No, like, you know, how many you buy. Like, you know, when you're picking up your tags for the year, when you're getting ready, that you're, you know, you're in production, obviously, you're trying to get ready for every state you need to be in. Are you picking up, like, 10 tags a year total? Like, how many tags
generally? No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Because for our show, I'm only expecting 2 to 3 episodes out of myself, 2 to 3 out of Brandon, one or two out of Zach, and then the rest are going to come from Chipper and Duff. And so really I need to fill 2 to 3, I need to get 2 or 3 episodes, and that's going to, for us, that's going to be, you know, 3 to 4 kills basically. So whenever I start planning things out, I kind of just plan them out by the day, and I got a budget that I got to try to stay within, and just kind of feeling out, you know, how far I can stretch some pennies, you know. I would say 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 5 tags that I buy every year that are not Oklahoma tags. Okay. So there'd be 7 tags total.
Okay.
So I guess it is closer to 10 than I thought. Dang. I was right.
7 tags.
Yeah, you're pretty close. I guess I normally have about 7 to 8 tags in my pocket every year. So.
How many do you buy, John?
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, I take a lot of those, but I'm in a couple. Where the hunt club is, we're in a it's actually a TB zone. So there's a lot of doe tags available up there because they obviously want to try to, you know, get the TB down. I end up punching probably about 4 or 5 tags a year. But out of those 4 or 5 tags a year that I'm punching, I'm, you know, one of them's a buck and the rest of them are all does.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I'm pretty selective though too. You know what I mean? I try to. You know, I try to shoot a decent sized buck every year. You know, I like
only 7 or 8 year olds.
Yeah,
like year and a half year old.
Yeah, 7 or 8 year old doe, more like. But I mean, for me, it's more about the meat and, you know, the camaraderie and stuff like that. So I'll pass on a 110, 120. Even that, you know, last year I think I passed on like a 130.
Yeah.
But.
Or he passed on you. We don't know yet.
I might have been. You're sleeping, yeah.
That is so funny. Yeah, we.
I buy a lot of tags though. That was the original question.
Yeah. That's the thing. But that's the thing about Michigan that's interesting to me is that we have a lot of deer. We have a lot of deer. And so when you hunt in Michigan in late season, if you have a corn feeder or any sort of corn or snow down, you're going to get 60 plus deer a day come into that spot. You could sit there literally. And, you know, if you have 2 guys going, you have a couple of doe tags, you can get a doe easily. It's going to be cold. You're going to be cold, but it can be done easily. But bucks, no. John and I were talking about this morning, actually, over coffee. I was driving to work. We're like, you know, it's weird. In the late season, the big bucks just don't seem to move. And you see a lot of doe in small bucks, but you never see, like, a big buck. And then we were talking about it. And, like, you know, once in a while, people get them. And then I said, I bet you that's because those deer got bumped. Or push somehow an accident, like a guy gets in his car and he's on his land or a tractor or something, right? Like just accidentally bumping that buck into a shooting zone.
I think like the bigger picture, you know, to that is you know, I mean, obviously deer are a nocturnal animal, and you know, after the rut, I mean, the chances of you seeing a deer during daylight hours, you know, they're a lot slimmer. You know what I mean? They've got it down to a science. They don't get big being stupid, right?
I would say that late season, especially for stupid. You guys up in Michigan, I've noticed this down here and all across the Midwest, is that, you know, when it's cold, those deer have to move.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's only 2 ways for a deer to warm himself up, and that's either to stand up and walk around or to eat. Yep. And so that's why you're talking about sitting over corn, you know, you're seeing 60 deer a night. I'm surprised that you guys aren't seeing, you know, your good bucks, unless your age structure is so messed up that you don't have good bucks.
It could be. Could be. I would say it's pretty accurate.
I'm just being honest, because when it gets really, really cold, like, you know, in the single digits and below, I mean, those deer, like, they have to move. I mean, because, you know, they're animals, you know, they're creatures just like we are. And, they're a lot more cold tolerant, obviously, but they still get cold. They can't walk in the living room and stand by the fire. They have to get up and walk around.
That's a true statement. I do think there's an age issue in Michigan, but we're trying. There's a lot of petitions going around. I noticed lately, actually,
we have a 2 buck tag system
that
right
kills
now.
Us. Yeah.
You know, so we're trying to get it to go back to a 1 buck. You know, because
that would help out a lot. I mean, Oklahoma went from Oklahoma is in, like, our case is a little different. So we went from a 3 buck state to a 2 buck state. would have been in 2006. And it really didn't affect a whole, this is just my dumb opinion. I haven't actually looked at the numbers, but I don't think it affected a whole lot, because basically what it did is it took a buck away from the bow hunter, because we were allowed 3 bucks, but you could kill all 3 with a bow, or you were allowed no more than 1 with a muzzleloader, or no more than 1 with a rifle. So if you're a gun hunter, you got 2 bucks. Like, you know, you don't have to worry about your 3rd buck because you didn't bow hunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So when they moved it down to 2, it really just affected the bow hunters. So as a gun hunter, you know, like my dad or my family, for instance, it didn't affect them at all. They still go out and muzzleloader, try to get the muzzleloader buck. They still go out and rifle and try to get their rifle buck. And so I can't back this up. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I don't think it affected the numbers that much.
Yeah, we're a mess. I'm
not I think it all depends on
disaster.
I think it all depends on where you go to. I mean, you know, like there's like southern parts of Michigan where, you know, a lot of these big deer are coming from, and then you've got, you know, parts of the middle of the state where a lot of big deer are coming from. But there's a lot of people that, you know, I mean, you know, obviously there's people that petition these things, right? Yeah. But there's, you know, like I know where we hunt, Tim, a lot. There's like the buck to doe ratio there is probably like 15 does to every buck. Absolutely. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's not higher, yeah.
So we try to take out, like I said, we try to take out as many does as we can to create, you know, to try to create some competition anyway, you know, for the bucks. But, you know, it's, I don't know. It's just one of those things. I mean, it's just, it's an odd state. It's weird.
Yeah, I feel like I love hunting here, but we have a lot of like the old school hunters who are just shoot a buck. I gotta shoot
a
buck.
See, that's the issue.
It's
a mental thing too, guys. That's the other problem I was gonna say, is that we all get antsy. That's the issue. You sit there all day, and you know, it's not like, this is the thing. I think until you're a hunter that goes with someone like Brandon to an area that you see giant bucks, you can't really understand or appreciate what it's like to see a 5-year-old deer.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. It's like, that's hard to pass up on a 3.5-year-old in Michigan when you don't know what it's like to see a 5.5-year-old deer.
Yeah.
And if you don't go, what was that?
Or your neighbor's going to shoot.
Yeah. Well, that's right now, but that's what I'm saying. If everybody's in this mindset that, you know, you get antsy and you just shoot because it's mm-hmm. an 8-point or it's a decent 110, mm-hmm. you're never going to get a buck. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, no offense to Nobu, but the one he shot is not a huge deer. Technically, should have let it walk, right? I'm just saying. There's a 150 on the land, right? So why not let it walk? And I'm not saying just him. I mean, there's that's just one example.
Is that the same one you shot at and missed?
No, it's the 150.
Oh, okay.
Not the...
I'll say this, just kind of going with this conversation, is that I think that I've actually stopped scoring all my deer for the last like 3 or 4 years. I haven't scored a single deer. I think that, and honestly, I think it has a lot to do with TV shows and, you know, the media that's in this industry has put a lot of emphasis on the antlers. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I've seen it firsthand, that's why I stopped scoring my deer, is people are chasing a number. Literally, that's all they care about is a number. And even if that number is age, I mean, the most important thing to me, and this is what I've been harping on for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, is to go out there and have fun. If you're going out there and you're having fun shooting, you know, a basket rack 8-point, and it's like, you know, your best buck, freaking shoot it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
And if you're going out there and you're having fun, you know, and you know, tossing up 5-year-olds, trying to shoot a 7- or 8-year-old, do it. You know, that's awesome. But we all, you know, are on the same boat. And, you know, it can be hard sometimes to look down, but not get frustrated at someone because they're not doing what you're doing. But, like, you know, we're all on the same team, and we're all out there trying to have fun. I mean, we're all having fun in our own little way. So, you know, like, for instance, I kind of got looked down on when I texted my neighbor. He said he only shoots 7- or 8-year-olds. I'm like, well, daggum, you know. Here I am shooting 4- and 5-year-olds, and I'm getting lashed out at.
Yeah, so, yeah.
That's well, I think point. A lot of us here, I mean, for us, it's about filling the freezer first. You know, a lot of times we go out there and you're sitting and you shoot a doe first. You get those nerves over with and, you know, fill the freezer. And then you're ready to sit and be patient and, you know, wait for that buck to come.
I think he's spot on, though, too. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people get shamed for their deer, right?
Yes.
And I think it's why it's kind of created this stigma almost like, hey, you got to shoot a 140. Or you got to shoot a 10-point. You know,
it's great, but look at the one hanging on my wall.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So when I went to, we were in an outfitter in Ohio, Ron and I went to this outfitter in Ohio a couple years back. And, you know, the rule there at the outfitter was 140 or better. So And this is all like free range and all that. And it's the rule is 140 or better. So we sat in Ohio, southern Ohio, and we watched over 100 plus deer walk by at different times. Probably 120, 130 class bucks. At one point, a 135, which was on the border. And the guy later, the guy's like told Ryan, he's like, "Why didn't you shoot that?" Ron's like, "Are you serious right now? You said 140 or better. Otherwise, it's like a $2,500 fee. Like, right. if you shoot some under 140. The guy's like, "Well, there's plus or minus five." He's like, "Oh, thanks for telling me now. You know,
thanks.
Seriously, you know." But you know, it just the whole hunt. You know, it was cool. But the reason I didn't at the time I was kind of okay with it was because every trail cam at night had a 160, 170. Yeah. They're huge bucks. You knew they're out there. You just didn't know where when they're coming.
Yeah.
So it was a different game. I felt like, why would I ever even consider shooting this 120 going by if I know there's a 180 out here or something monstrous, you know? Yep.
Well, yeah. I think that's part of it, too. I mean, you know, nowadays everybody's got a trail cam. Everybody can see what's on their property. Everybody sees what's out there. So they want to wait for that big buck. So they pass on the smaller ones, too, right? I mean, I know we would.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. If I hunted that land normally... Yeah. Like, for sure, I wouldn't shoot any of those deer, because, I mean, when I see what I'm seeing, there's no way.
Right.
There's no point, you know? Yeah. You shoot a doe. There's so many does that walked by. It was unbelievable.
Right. But in Michigan... It's different in Michigan anyway, though, because Michigan, you can take two.
But in Michigan, you don't see that. That's what I'm saying. Right. Except
you
for
don't.
Certain spots.
No.
And it's very rare that you could pattern or get onto a 140, 150.
Right.
At least for us. I mean, at least from what we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, but you got... I mean...
Let alone, what, six?
Parcels are stacked on top of parcels. So, I mean, you got a neighbor that's, you know... Got a 20-acre parcel. You got a 40-acre parcel. You got another neighbor behind that's got 40 acres. I mean, you don't.
It's hard to manage these little spots.
It's really hard to manage little spots down there. Yeah.
That's the way it is here where I live. I live in just outside of Oklahoma City, and like you know, all of our land. I own 30 acres, and then the guy next to me owns 10, and the next to him owns 20. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's the exact same situation here.
Except your neighbor's shooting seven-year-olds. Your money.
My neighbor to the east, he has 160. He is shooting 7 year olds. Exactly. But the one to my west, I got two neighbors to the west, so we have a buck I actually first seen this year. I called him Frosty because he was a piebald buck, and he had white from his back rib all the way down to his like back ham. He had white going up his legs like socks, and he was a little, you know, year and a half old 6-point. And I was so looking forward to this deer growing up. And my neighbor to the west, two neighbors over, texted me and said that he killed this piebald buck just because he thought it was cool, you know. And so I have to take a deep breath because of the statement that I stated earlier. This guy's out there having fun. We're all in the same boat. And, yeah, it's not what I would – this is clearly not what I would have done. I took pictures of him. You know, I had him in front of me a dozen times. And, you know, he got some meat for the freezer, and, you know, he got a cool story. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just trying to grow patience as we – because what you said earlier is that you wouldn't shoot a 140 – or 135 if you knew there was a 160 on the property. Well, to me, I like to have fun. And shooting, you know, and shooting a solid deer, if that deer at that 140 is, you know, a 4 or 5 year old deer, that's what I'm after, is an old deer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe that 160 is a 4 or 5 year old deer too, but I get a shot at the 140 first. I'm going to shoot the
140. Yeah, that is where it gets tricky. That is where it gets tricky. If you get that chance, what do you do, right? Especially with a bow. I'm talking
bow. I'm here. A hard believer, and anyone that knows me, that this is a true statement. I will shoot in the first 5 seconds of a hunt what I would shoot in the last 5 seconds. And it's to a fault at some point because, you know, I've shot some deer that I could instantly held out for and got a much better deer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't regret any of them. I love them. Like, I love every deer. I can tell you. I got a big wall in my living room. I can tell you the date that I killed all those deer. I can tell you about what was happening that day. I mean, I can tell you everything about them. And I love every one of them. And that's what it's about for me. It's, you know, I'm having fun. I'm getting to share it with a field producer or with family and, you know, making memories.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, hey, you know what? Let's talk real quickly about, let's change subject and talk about cameras, things like that. Because, you know, some people just, you know, they don't understand TV and how it works. And I think it's interesting. So one of the things I noticed real quickly on your Instagram is on your bow, you got a little camera. I believe it's a Sony. It's like a white camera. Is that the, which Sony is that?
That's a Sony action cam. We got them like 3 years ago, I think. They are they shoot 4K. They are a really good POV camera.
Did you now? Have you seen their new one? They launched like RX1 or 001 or something like that.
No, I have not.
Just curious. Yeah, this one looks sweet. I was actually going to get this one, start getting this for us, because I was getting very aggravated with GoPro lately.
Yeah,
we've had some failures.
So it has the same sensor as GoPro. I actually talked to the people at Sony. They were, anyway, it's the same sensor as Sony, so it brings in the same amount of light. Actually, it brings in more light because it has a Zeiss. It actually has a piece of glass as a lens instead of a piece of plastic. And so whenever you look at the image side by side with the GoPro, first of all, it brings in more light in low light situations, and then the image is actually crisper because of the lens itself.
So, yeah, it looks sweet. So then what kind of cameras you guys run for production portion for the main cams?
The main cams, I mean, I think we talked about this last time. I mean, we're not huge on just like, you know, spending gobs of money for
Reds.
for our hunting rigs. So our actual hunting rigs, they're, you know, like mid-consumer cameras, which I think I got an NX100. We run NX5U, all Sony NX5Us. What's another one we got? That's the two main ones we run. That's the two that we're running right now, which are older cameras. Well, the NX100 is a newer camera, but it's like, yeah, you know, it's like it's less than $2,000 for the base camera, and then you rig it out, and you're, you know, a little over $3,000. So, yeah. I mean, compared to what we can have, it's not that much. And I have a studio camera that I use for a lot of stuff. I had the A7, the original A7S, about to get the new one, hopefully. And that has a big shoulder mount and it's decked out. That's
cool.
A pretty nice rig, but I don't use that in the field to film hunts. I have used it in the field, but not our main camera.
Well, I like that you said a Sony too, because I think, you know, we talk a lot about here about what's right in the right lighting situations. I think to us, you know, that Sony operates so good in the low light, environment versus other brands. So.
Hunting, you can't beat it for hunting.
Yeah, you really can't.
But the problem is like, you know, I've tried. If you're so, I know Brandon, you most likely use a cameraman, right? In most of the stuff you guys do.
Yes.
So we're solo filmers. So for us, taking the A7S II in the field is not a smart move because it starts to rain and you're on your own. You're trying to get the shot. But if you don't have in a DSLR type function, if you don't have a cameraman, it's really hard because, absolutely, adjusting
it's
everything.
It's very manual.
So what we've been using is the Sony AX53 4K, which is more of an actual camcorder. But... Mm-hmm. That even that one has, I mean, because it zooms in like it's got a Zeiss glass, but it zooms in like a camcorder. But to me, it works good because the battery life's long too. Whereas the A7's a joke. I can't believe how garbage those batteries are.
It's remarkable how bad the A7.
I don't understand why they can't fix that. Like, come on, dude. Like,
I heard that new batteries are not like that. I heard that in what's the new A7 called?
A7 III.
The A9. The new A series. I heard that battery that comes in that is.
They definitely need
exceptional.
Is it really? Oh, good.
Well,
what I read.
The FS5 and the FS7 have amazing batteries. Yep. Those big camcorder batteries. Those are the ones had. Yeah. The original giant ones. You know, the N series.
Those would last forever.
Those are amazing. Yeah. Those things. But anyway, all right, Brandon. So, Nubo Matthews, what's your thoughts, man?
The new Trix.
Yeah. You be shooting that thing?
Hell yeah. Come on, man. I'll start this conversation with what I'm about to say with caveat. Is I'm not a fan of short ATA bows.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I like longer axle bows. Like, I honestly, and this is like totally against the grain here, but my like preferred axle to axle would probably be like 37 for a hunting bow.
Wow.
Like, I like a longer bow. Like, remember the LX that came out? You know, it was like 2003.
Yep.
I think that was 37. That's like my like butter zone for a hunting bow.
Wow. Do you shoot target bows too, or no?
I used to shoot. I shot tournaments for a long time. I just got out of it. I got out of it when I got into hunting, and I'm just about to get back into it. So,
cool.
Obviously, when you get those new target bows, they're, you know, they're in their 40s. But
yeah.
Anyway, so. Saying that, knowing that I'm not a huge fan of short axle bows, I love it. It's unbelievable the way that it holds. It doesn't feel like you're holding a, you know, a 28-inch bow. I don't know why I feel why it's like that. Maybe because the riser, the way that I have the riser and that harmonic dampener so far forward, and then plus I have a 9-inch tap stabilizer that's weighted on the end, and I have weights on the end of it, so like it really, I mean, this thing holds like a rock, and I don't know, it holds really well, and it probably. The axle's 28, but those cams are huge. And so whenever you're actually holding it, it's probably like 28's probably not like a good description of the way that you're holding it. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah. Oh, for sure.
String to string is longer than 28.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. The one thing I noticed about that bow when we got it was that it's extremely well-balanced. So the Halon, I remember that it would kind of fall forward with the weight on the top, whereas this bow does not move. It's pretty much, it doesn't move. It's perfectly balanced. So by adding that, by making it shorter, pushing out that front end, I think it's called 3D stabilizer or something like that they're calling it, or 3D something.
Harmonic damper.
Yeah, that's it. And then that pushing that out caused it to be self-balanced, I think. Because normally it was a little bit top-heavy where the front end of the Halon would fall forward, but this one, wow. Oh man, they did a great job. What color did you get?
I love it. It holds like you're talking about. It holds like a rock. I mean, I'm out here shooting 90 yards off my porch and just freaking, you know, just pounding it. And
yeah, that's awesome.
I'm looking forward to getting it in the woods here in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
In Northwest Oklahoma. So.
What color?
It's smoking fast too. So I mean, it's got a pretty short brace height, and so it's pretty aggressive, but. It's smoking fast. Has Matthews has always had a smooth draw cycle and a good wall, which is really important to me because some of them, some bows, especially you get a lower brace height. Some bows, their draw cycle is like, oh my god, and then you're at full draw and it feels like you're on the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
it can go at any like you move a micro meter and it wants to pull out of your hand. So. Matthews is never, that's never an issue with the Matthews that I found, so.
That's cool, man. Yeah, so
I love it.
How long have you had it?
I've had it for a month, maybe.
Nice.
What
color?
Beginning of November sometime. Black.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm black and I got red and black strings.
Cool. Nice.
Very cool.
Yeah, looks good.
Yeah.
So what's this, you say here, did someone say sausage? This looks amazing.
It is amazing. I wish you guys were here.
No, it's okay. You can mail one of those. Those are mailable. I'll take one of those. Couple hats. We're good. Just let me know. I'll get you the shipping address after this.
We'll just overnight it.
Look at that. Oh my god, it looks great.
Yeah, that deer that I made that sausage out of is actually the deer that I killed on my property. It's a deer I was after all year called Load, and that was my first. That's my first go at summer sausage.
Huh?
So electric smoker?
Yeah, it's electric smoker. Yeah.
So do you just grind it up then in the grinder, like one of this picture with all the ground meat on it?
Yeah, yeah. So
and then you pack
I don't know what picture. Yes, I don't know what picture you're looking at with ground meat, but yeah,
it's pretty far down
there. We. So I use a grinder to grind it up into hamburger or burger, mix it. So this is actually mixed with it's 2-to-1 with. Beef. The sausage is two to one beef.
Nice.
It'd be amazing.
It is amazing. And so then you put the mix in there, you put the liquid smoke inside of that, then you let it marinate for a night, and then you stuff it in the casing and you smoke it in the hickory smoke. Oh, you guys.
I know what I'm asking for. I'm hungry. We gotta end this call. I'm hungry.
The thing is, it's winter right now, so when you ship this, it's not going to be a problem. It's 30 degrees everywhere.
Perfect. Everything I get from UPS is practically frozen right now. So.
That looks
a thin T-shirt. So I mean, it's warm here.
I wish John would make this. John, you should be making this.
I can probably.
You're kind of the cook. You and Kevin are like the cooks around here.
You freeze that. How long does that stay good?
How long does it stay good?
Yeah, you freeze that in the freezer. Then?
I actually vacuum packed all the. I left 2 sticks out, which is about 2.5 pounds out today. And I vacuum sealed the rest of it and put it in my freezer. It'll stay, I don't know, it'll be gone well before it gets
I think
back.
We just need a long weekend. Let's just drive, fly down to Oklahoma, go see Garth Brooks.
Christmas is coming.
Go to Brandon's house, eat some sausage, then go back to hang out with Garth Brooks. I mean, Garth loves us. We'll just...
Yeah, that easy.
Garth loves us.
Yeah, Garth gives us...
You can do all of that if you're ever...
All right, Brandon. thanks a lot, man, for joining us. We appreciate it. If you're watching this, go, you know, check out Major League Bowhunter. You'll be able to watch all these great deer kills. Too many. This year, next year, right? That'll air next year, I assume.
Yeah, they're going to air next year, starting third quarter.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
They're just going to bleed out. We're just going to start putting kills on random shows. So check us out on Heartland Bow Hunter, Realtree Road Trips. I mean, we're going to be on all of them.
Awesome, man! Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you, man. Have a good one. Happy holidays.
Thanks for having me, guys.
If I'm remembering right, I was probably 14, maybe 15 years old the first time someone questioned why I hunt. It was a little girl from down the street. She could see my deer hanging on the back side of our home as she walked to the bus stop that morning. It was a small 6-point I had taken the evening before, my second buck with a bow. Dad and I had plans to skin and process it after school that day. I don't remember the extent of what she said exactly. In fact, I probably toned her out after she started using words like cruelty and murder to define hunting. And I remember I wasn't embarrassed, and I certainly wasn't ashamed of my accomplishment as she launched a barrage of insults at me. I wasn't mad at her, I didn't feel the same hate for her that she had for me at that moment. What I really thought is, how on earth could someone not support hunting? A couple of decades later, I realized that maybe we do have something in common with that little girl at the bus stop that morning. That's our love for wildlife, the beauty of nature, and how passionate we are about preserving this great resource and passing it on to our next generation. I think the difference is nobody's ever shown her, or she just hasn't taken the time to learn what hunting really is, the importance of conservation, and how important it is for the future of wildlife. She may view this as a cold, heartless act of aggression towards animals and a bloodlust for killing all the wildlife until there's nothing left, but we know that isn't what hunting's all about at all. In fact, it's the exact opposite. We're proud of our heritage, we're thankful for the generations before us that gave us these opportunities. At the turn of the century, wildlife populations were on the decline in North America. Laws were written, hunting seasons were established, and now hunters became the conservationists. Placing an excise tax on licenses and equipment have provided billions to successful wildlife restoration efforts, creating and protecting new habitat, including our lakes, our rivers, our parks, and all the fish and wildlife that inhabit them. It's not in our best interest to destroy wildlife. We're a part of nature. We coexist. Every store, restaurant, gas station, fast food chain on every corner in any town you've ever been to supplies you, the consumer, prepackaged meat. Let's not sugarcoat it. That animal was slaughtered. It died so you could eat it. Now, hunting isn't for everyone, and that's fine, but take comfort in knowing that the future of that animal depends on the continued support of the sportsmen and women who do. So I challenge you, I invite you to come into the woods with me. See wildlife the way I do. Listen to the turkeys gobble off their roosts. Feel the excitement as a buck chases a doe out in front of your stand with its nose to the ground. Better yet, sit in a blind as a youth hunter takes their first deer, catches that first fish, and is finally able to put a meal on the table for their family. I don't hunt because I hate wildlife. I hunt because I love wildlife, because their well-being is dependent on our efforts, and I can't think of anything more meaningful than passing that love for the outdoors onto the next generation.
You want to get out there, you want to be a part of it. It's about the love, the passion for the outdoors. You know, we're making our property better, we're trying to improve our hunting, we're working on it all year long. It's not a show up in October and hunt a few times. And this is a passion that we have. We can't turn it off. You know, it's 12 months a year, nonstop.
So proud of you. You got it.
Yes. Let's go get it, Dad.
You ready?
Do us all a favor. Get a kid outdoors. Enjoy what Mother Nature gave to us. And you know what? Help grow this heritage. As us hunters, all we have is each other.
Thanks so much for listening to the Bowhunter Planet podcast, online at bowhunterplanet.com, with your host, Team BHP. Check us out on Facebook at Bowhunter Planet. We'll catch you next time.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.